This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
This week, which is the Shiur before Purim, we should actually have the conception of Esther. Isn't that odd? What did you say it was? Stopped on some people, that's what it comes up. You stopped on some people. And that's not just by chance. That's one of the areas that I've always found God's guiding hand is what I happen to come across on what day. Sometimes when you're just needing to find something, it happened to you as well, Mr. Khan. I can see you. You just happen to find a Gemara on the day that you're looking for it.
Gemara. Life goes that way.
Yeah, that's how it is. Just when you need it. But the day that the Shiur before Purim, we actually deal with the conception of it. So we'll see how. What is the essence of Esther? What does the word mean? Hidden mystery. Well, while you were away, we finished the whole of Chumash, the whole of Tanakh. We're on the Megillah.
It's a long trip.
Welcome back. We're on Kaftet. We're on 29. And we did. We're on 29, Kaftet, and we're on Potsuk. About Chafim or Chafdal, we'll start on 23:24, chapter 29, verse 23:24. Esther means mystery, it means hidden. Where can you think of many women in Tanakh who are less hidden than Esther? Who play a more active part than Esther? She's a queen, she manipulates the king, she's the heroine, she dominates Mordechai. Can you think of any woman in the whole of Tanakh that is more out there than Esther? It's a little bit like Yaakov being called the honest one. Remember, we said that of all the people who did things that appear to be deceitful, Yaakov's the greatest example. He's the one who's called perfectly honest. Esther, the one woman in Tanakh who plays a more dominant leadership role than anybody else. Maybe Yael, a bit of an army general, Devorah, she's quick in and out, she appears, she goes. Yeah, you've got a whole build-up of a story around Esther, a yontif for her, a fast day for her. She's become such a central part in Jewish life and played such a dominant role in the beginning. Why would she be called Esther? What's the Esther about her? Where's the mystery and the hidden aspect of who she is and what she is. It's a rhetorical question, but if you have a very good answer,
I'm going to run for queen. This kind of happened to her.
Yeah, you're right. She didn't run for queen, but once she got there, she seemed to do it with quite a lot of relish. She did it well. She changed history. She's a woman who changed the course of history and saved the entire Jewish nation by being very proactive. Very, very poor. You're right, at times she didn't, and Mordechai had to say to her at one point, if you don't do what you have to, somebody else will, and you'll lose the push. She didn't want to play that role. Fine, to call her an unwilling actress, but to call her Esther, she isn't Esther.
She was able to hide the fact that she was Jewish for all the time that she was thinking, all the time she used to.
That's interesting. That is interesting.
And still be able to
function perfectly Jewishly and perfectly successfully. And that I want to come back to. I think that's an important observation, that she was able to live married to the king in a way that he nor anybody else knew she was Jewish. Did she like Shabbos lives on Friday night? She must have. Did she go to the mikveh? She probably did. Did she live in every way according to halacha? Yeah, the only thing she did wrong, and that she was entitled and obligated to, was live with Achashverosh. That's the only thing that she did. Apart from that, she was a tzaddik. So her capacity to live a completely non-ostentatious and even hidden Jewish life without compromising that Jewish life is certainly an element of her. I think that's a very important point, and I need to come back to that. What's interesting about the Megillah, and perhaps we'll talk about it a little bit on the Purim, is how would the Megillah story have been written if it were written by reporters? Would it look very different? What would be the difference if journalists wrote the story? Historians, chroniclers of the time, what would be the difference?
If it is a story written, it wouldn't be a story because it points over such an extended period of time that reporters, they look at the individual moments, but you have to look over a 9 or 10 year period.
Well, let's say we then went through the newspapers of the 9 or 10 year period and we cut and pasted all the stories relating to it. What would that, and that's how we formed the Megillah, what would be the most important differences, Linda?
I think it would emphasize the party with which the opens up and the sensational aspects of Vashti's and Ahasuerus's relationship.
Right, and then Vashti's executed. That would
right.
be sort of scene one.
Yes.
That would be a big thing. Then what would come?
Whatever was most sensational was the demurrer.
So what would be some of the differences? And if they're responsible reporting, not even irresponsible reporting.
There's a link to the question that you asked us all about hidden. Like maybe she made her impact felt to other people rather than posing in the front.
Yes, extend, very, very good. To extend that further.
She wasn't the person that the reporters would write about. They would write about modifying that.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. Just think it through. She would hardly appear in the story. King marries Jewish woman. Would appear as a sort of a subheading somewhere on some. They wouldn't even know that she's Jewish, probably. King takes new bride, you know, maybe a wedding, delightful, and all the rest of it. And that would really be the end. Everything else she did was not public. She instructed Mordechai. She had little private parties in the palace for Haman and Ahasuerus. Wouldn't be in the newspapers. There's hardly anything that she did in the entire story that was public knowledge. So here you have a woman who changed the course of history in a way that the only way we know about it is because we have an inside view. That's new. That's Esther. That's probably the finest. All our different definitions, maybe one day we should go through the case and take all the discussions we've had about new, and we should try and formulate a true picture of what it means. That perhaps this is one of the most important element of what it means. Not somebody who has withdrawn from a part to play. Somebody who plays a very vital part and is very much engaged in the affairs of the nation. And at a leadership level in her case, not it's not always in everybody's cases, but certainly Esther teaches us that there is no limit to the role and impact a woman can have without transgressing anything of tzniut. There's absolutely no limit to the impact. The only question is, where would you see that impact? Where would you see it from? Now, for a man, there are not many men who could do that. There are not many men who would stick with it all that way through without anybody knowing about it, without them getting some kind of public adulation. But a woman can. She has that capacity to find her fulfillment in what she's doing, in what she's achieving, in the results that she's getting, and in the intimate relationships of her life. It's less important to her what people out there are saying. It's not that critical, and that's the essence of tzniut. Now the question is, where did that idea, that capacity, that gene, that tzniut gene, where did that develop from? And in learning about the four mothers and the three fathers and this part of the Torah, we're actually learning the genetic formulation. This is where Jewish DNA started developing. And that's why every action of these people is so important, because whatever they mastered became part of Jewish DNA. Now we can look at the Chumash, and then we're going to do a piece of Gemara, and then it'll link together. So in verse 23, Vayehi v'erev, and it was in the evening, Vayikach et Leo Lito, and Lovan took Leo his daughter. Okay, chapter 29, verse 23. So the wedding was set, Yaakov was marrying Rachel. and the 7 years that he was working for her had passed, and had passed quickly. And had passed quickly because two reasons. Just before we go into this, let's just see where Yaakov is at. If you look at verse 20, Vayavod Yaakov v'Rachel sheva shanim, and Yaakov worked for Rachel for 7 years. Didn't work for her. He worked for Laban in order to gain her. Vayiyu ve'enov kiyomim achadim, and they were in his eyes like a few days. Ve'ahav oso iso, for his love for her. Says the Chizkuni, davar mu'at hayo be'enov la'avod bishvilo zayin shanim. Working 7 years for her, that was easy. He thought that was a cheap price. He thought he was very lucky to get that. The Sipunu is more specific and says, Shechashav she'ayor ro'u lo seis mo'a rav mizeh. He thought he would have to pay much more for her. He thought he got a wonderful deal. Can you imagine a young man saying that today? I have to work 7 years for my wife, that's cheap. I would be very lucky to get a wife and only have to work for her for 7 years. They don't say that. I'm entitled to my wife now. How long is she going to work for me? What's she going to bring to me? That's just, look at the foundation of that relationship. A man walking into that, working for her for 7 years and saying, that was nothing. I'm so lucky, only 7 years for a girl like that. Look how fortunate I am. Ve'ilu, and now the Chizkuni adds again, ve'ilu haya lavan shoel yoser. And if Lavan would have asked more, haya Yaakov over, Yaakov would gladly have done it. Nothing was too much for him for offer. And that means that love persisted during those 7 years. Didn't lose it. And the Chizkuni says there's another way of learning it. It says, if you look at the verse carefully, it says, he worked for her for 7 years. And then it says, and it was like a few days. It says the Chizkuni. Another interpretation is, la'achar she'avad hayo be'enav ki'yomim achad. And when the 7 years were over, he looked back and said, that wasn't so bad. Avol b'shar ta'avoyde, but while he was working, hayo be'enav ki'yomim merubim, it was like a very long time. Yitoch ha'avosoyto, because he loved her so much. So it had the two elements on a day-to-day basis, each day another day, and how long did I have to still wait? Each day on a day-to-day basis was long and tough because he loved her so much. But the totality of what had happened, he considered that as a small price to pay, and he regarded that as something relatively easy. And now finally the time comes after these seven years of waiting, and the wedding night comes. Vayihivo erev, and it was that evening. Vayikach es leo vito. And Lavan takes Leah, dresses her up in the wedding dress, puts on a heavy veil, Vayova Yosoy Lavan brings her under the chuppah. Vayova Leah, and they had a wedding. Vayitain Lavan lo es Zilpah Shivchosoy, and Lavan gave her Zilpah as his servant. Leah Vita Shivchosoy. Zilpah was Lavan's servant, and she gave Zilpah to Leah. Vayihiva Boykin, it was in the morning. He wakes up in the morning, and who's sharing his bed? Leah. Vayomer Lavan, and he marches straight up to Lavan, and he says, Ma zoytoti soli, what have you done to me? Halo v'rochel levadati imach, v'lomari nisoni, I worked for you for Rochel, why have you cheated me? Vayomer Lavan, Lavan says, lo yeh asechein mimkomen, you know, I'm a very religious man. And in our society, older daughters don't get married before younger daughters. I was hoping until the last minute that Leah would find a chosen. I thought maybe even just before the wedding, somebody would propose to her, and that would be fine. But you know what? Came time for the chuppah, and Leah was still single. If you think of a kind father, I would allow that to happen. Can't do that. You know what? He says, Malay Shavua, let's wait another 7 years. And I'll give you Rochel as well. You can have them both. Another interpretation, Malei Shavua Zoyf, is wait till Sheva Brochus are over, and then you can marry Rachel, which is in fact what happened. After Sheva Brochus, he married Rachel, and then worked the other 7 years. He worked the other 7 years off. Let us go a little bit further before we discuss it. So work after the Sheva Brochus, but no gam is Zoyf, I'll give you also this one, Rachel. For in return for the work you do work for me for another 7 years. Vayas Yaakov came by Amalei Shavua Zoyf. Yaakov did that work. He completed the Sheva Brochus. Vayitin lo es Rochel Bitoy, and he gave him Rochel his daughter, lo le Isha as a wife. Vayitin Lavan Rochel Bitoy is Bilho Shivcho, so lo le Shivcho, and Lavan gave Rochel Bilho. So there are now four women in the household. There's Leah, there's Rochel, there's Zilpah, who is Leah's servant, and there's Bilho, who is Rachel's servants. And don't think of them as servants, think of them as personal assistants. They were not maid servants in the regular sense, they were her companions. Vayovi gam el Rachel, vayehav gam et Rachel mileo. And he was intimate with Rachel, and in fact loved Rachel more than Leah. Vayavid ima, why is what's so surprising about it? Of course he loved Rachel more than Leah. Why does the Torah seem surprised that he in fact loved Rachel more than Leah? The Mephoroshim say, the Ramban brings it, Rashi, the Radak brings it, others bring it. The Radak has a different one, which I'll tell you, is that Hatan, the reason is, says the Ramban, the woman who creates first intimacy with a man in a way that really opens up the channels of that type of relationship is something he never really gets over. And there was a fear, almost, that because Leah was the first one that he was with, that that would damage his relationship with Rachel later. And the Torah says that wasn't so. When he married Rachel, although he was the second, she was his second relationship, the intensity of the love for Rachel was just the same. It was much more than it was for Leah. The Radak says, "Vayehav gamet Rachel." The Hodiah attempts to teach us, "Ki gam Leah ahav." Says, and he also, "Vayehav gamet Rachel mi Leah." Strange sentence. And he also loved Rachel. If I read it, if you look at the trop on that, then you'll see how you've got to read this. Vayehav gamet Rachel. Pause. And he also loved Rachel. Also could mean, and he even loved Rachel. That was the first way we explained it. That although his first relationship was with Leah, he still loved Rachel. Another way of translating it is, Vayehav gamet Rachel. He also loved Rachel. Implying, he loved Leah too. He loved them both. But the next word, Mileo, even more so than Leah. Explains the Radak. The Hodiah to teach us, ki gam Leah ahav, he loved Leah too, which is going to be very important for two sentences further. Afal pi shaloi bochar bo mitchilo, even though she was not the chosen one. Kivan she niseis loi. Afal pi shaloi hayo bekavano. Once they became married and intimate, even though that wasn't the intention, avo kamosha odom ohev ishto, he loved her as one loves one's wife. Aval yeh said ohev Rachel, but he loved Rachel more. An interesting concept that there is something that there can be something that Torah is acknowledging, a love that could be even more than that which is the normal love that a man has for his wife. And that was the love that Yaakov had for Rachel. This was something super. This was something beyond the norm of what a man does. Rachel, Leo and Yaakov were like a normal husband and wife. There was love between them, there was care between them, there was feeling between them. But with Rachel this was something spectacular. This was something completely different. Next sentence, Vayar Hashem, and God saw ki sanu aleo, that Leah was despised. Vayipchach Yitzchak, is that the same thing? We've just been told that he loved Leah as a man loves his wife. God says she's despised. He saw that she's despised. Vayipchach Yitzchakmo, so he opened her womb, the Rochel Akora, and kept Rochel barren, to try and balance it. Says the Radak, who's just told us how much he loved Leah as well, Lo haya Yaakov tonayot, so Yaakov did not hate her. Aval haya ohevet, so he loved her. Ela lefisha ya ohevet, Rachel Yosef koro leleo snua. But in God's eye, the way a woman feels when her koro, the other wife, is loved more, she feels hated. It doesn't matter what he feels. He loves her, that's fine, but she feels hated. She feels rejected. And that's what God's tuning into. He's saying, that's fine, you love her, you love them both, you love her more. But for Leo, there's no more or less. For Leo, there is rejection. And he tunes into, Hashem tunes into that, and gives Leo children immediately to try and balance it out. And we'll come back to that verse, but I want to go back to the wedding night, the first wedding. The big question, of course, is, Rachel knew very well that this was likely to happen. And the Gemara in Megillah says the following. fasted, you know. Because of the tznius of Rachel, so we get that word attached to Rachel, Zachso, she had merit, the Yotso Mimena Shaul, and Shaul was a descendant of his. So the concept of Shaul is conceived at this time by Rachel. And don't forget, now that we finished learning about Shaul on Monday night, Shaul is a hero. Shaul is a man who goes through terrible ups and downs, but he starts off righteous and he ends off righteous. His life goes through awful trauma and turbulence and dilemma and struggle, but he starts off perfect and he ends perfect, and that's how Shaul is in our eyes. And that concept of Shaul and everything he brought to bear was born in Rachel. And because of the sneers that Shaul had, where did we see the sneers of Shaul?
Didn't
want to
be the king.
Was part of it. We see it in a number of places.
Telling.
We see the number of places. He didn't tell anybody, even after he was made king. Any other places you can think of? Do you remember what saved his life when he went to the cave? The cave scene. That sense of cleanliness and of separation and of sneers, just of privacy. A terribly private man. And David sees that and when David sees that, he realizes this is a man that cannot be killed, this is a man that is superior. And because of the tzniut in Shaul, Zachor v'Yosef Simeno Esther, he is the ascendant of Esther. So there's a line of tzniut DNA, starting with Rachel. She developed it. And that DNA produces a Shaul eventually, which produces an Esther eventually. And that doesn't just mean that coincidentally they descended from one another, that means that Rachel generated qualities that built a Shaul, and Shaul added to those qualities that built an Esther. There couldn't have been an Esther if there wasn't a Shaul. There couldn't have been a Shaul if there wasn't a Rachel. The Jewish DNA is built over years and years, over generations and generations. That's why we have such a problem with marrying up. That's one of the reasons that you're interfering with a process of evolution. But you don't know who and what. Between Shaul and Esther, there were all sorts of generations and people. If one of them had brought in a DNA that wasn't part of that evolution, there wouldn't have been an Esther. If somewhere between Rachel and Shaul, somebody had brought in DNA that wouldn't have been okay, there wouldn't have been a Shaul. We're playing with the future of with the future. There is nothing more futuristic that we can do than get married and have children. There's nothing that we do that has more impact on the future, and we don't know how much impact. We don't know what one child's descendant might be or do in sometime in the future. All we know is that we're impacting radically on the future by generating children, and that there is the formulation of a child that might be born in 500 years' time could be taking place at this very moment as the Jewish DNA, as I call it, starts to develop and evolve. What is this tzniut that Rachel created, that she generated, that she conceived of, that was hers so uniquely? This is what the Gemara says. Vayagid Yaakov l'Rachel ki achi avi ohi. Yaakov told Rachel that he was his father's brother. That he was her father's brother. Asked the Gemara v'chi achi avi ohi, but that's not true. That wasn't the relationship. He is the nephew of her father. Why does she say, I am your father's brother? What happened was, he proposed to her at the well. Right away, he said, will you marry me? Amro lay in. She said, yes, at the well. That deal was done between the two of them. No shachronim. Miu, she said, that is a problem. Abro ramo, I've got to tell you, my father is a crook. That you better know. The lo yachrov lay, and he will get the better of you. You're an honest man, and there's no way you're going to be able to come out right dealing with my father. Isn't that Lashon Hara? Sometimes one has to protect people. When you have to protect somebody, you've got to speak. You've got to tell them. You'll often hear, and she's looking at people, I can't tell you, I didn't. When you protect people, somebody's getting involved in a relationship where you have information that could affect that relationship, you have to disclose it. Amar lo, he said to her, Ochi vana b'ramos, don't worry. I know how to cheat if I have to cheat. If that's the only way to protect myself, I will outdo him. in scheming. Amro leyumi shari the tzaddiki is the gibram yusuf. He says, but you're supposed to be a tzaddik, so you have limitations. He has no limits. He can do anything. You have limits as to what's right and wrong. How will you ever get the better of him? Amar lo in, he says, no one has to. In Nova Titabo, the Amakashtik Titapel, when he brings a verse from Shmuel Beis, the end of the book, that says that with a crooked person, you have to be crooked. If you have to deal with a crooked person, you try not to deal with him. But if the only way you can protect yourself in your dealing with a crooked person is you play the game by his rules, you have to do that. That's part of how you have to deal with him. So don't worry about my righteousness. Amar lo, so he said to her, Mayram Yusuf, what are you worried about? What can he do to me? Omreli Isli Achta the Kashishimina, she said, I have an older daughter. And I assure you, he will do anything and everything, but he's not going to let you marry me before she's married. So if you think that we're going to get married while she's not married, he will figure something out. But I know she knew exactly. He said, that's no problem, that's easy. What's he going to do? He'll cheat us on the wedding night, that's all he can do. He'll dress up like you, he'll lock you away. And he'll bring her to the chuppah, and that's how he'll do it. It's obvious. So Masalot Simonim. So here's a sign under the chuppah. Just tap your right ear twice, just before I give you the ring, and then I know it's you. That's all. Kimata Leila. When the night came, and the wedding is set, and everybody's there, the crowds are there, and Rachel and Yaakov's dressed all beautifully, standing in his glory under the chuppah, and Leah is dressed in a beautiful wedding gown, the veil is put over her. In those days there wasn't a bedekin, which was where the problem arose from, and she starts to walk down the aisle. And Rachel thinks ahead and says, Hashto michtefo achtoi. What's going to happen when she gets under the chuppah? Wedding will start, and he'll take out the ring, and she won't tap her ear twice, and he'll stop the wedding. And what's my sister going to have to do? She's going to have to walk back down that corridor. Matatina Nihala, she went up to her and she said, before the he gives you the ring, just tap your ear 2 times. She couldn't have her sister walking back in shame. So she gave Leah the secret code. Behind the and that's why it says, Yaakov was so sure that was Rachel, because she had the secret sign. But it was only in the morning that he realized that this wasn't there.
They kept them
covered
the whole time.
It was dark in the night time there. No light, it was dark, you couldn't see, and they were sisters, maybe even twins. Michlal Ad Hashta Lav Leah. Until that time she was not Leah, says the Gemara. Until that time she was Rachel. She studied Rachel. Her father had probably prepared her for years for this. She don't forget 7 years this was being planned. She studied Rachel. She knew how to play Rachel's part. She knew how to act like Rachel. She knew how to imitate Rachel's voice. She knew everything. All she was missing was the code. She got the code too. So that night there was no way that in that darkness Yaakov could know that this wasn't Rachel. The Fichach Zotza V'yotzen Imena Shol. That was the creation of Shol. In that action was the creation of Shol. Was it right of her to do it? Well, clearly we see yes. She's not criticized. On the contrary, out of that comes Shol. After that comes the salvation. Had she not done that, the Jewish people would have been destroyed in Shushan hundreds of years later. When we think of the consequence of little actions of these great people at the beginnings of their lives, had she not done that, there would have been no Jewish people today. There would have been no Shaul, there would have been no David, there would have been no Jews. Everything would have been different. The whole of Jewish history would have been different. Amen.
It's kind of like Lavan says, Lavan says, Lavan,
why did he cheat me? No, he says to Lavan, why did you cheat me?
Why did he cheat me? But in essence, he was doing exactly what they knew he was going to do. And Rachel was the one who
let him down.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to there seems to be no anger at Rachel. Nowhere does he get angry at Rachel. And now we also understand why the Torah says, and he loved Rachel too. That even after all this, after the end of Sheva Brachos, he marries her, not a word of anger or of objection. She must have known him so well as to know that is what he would have wanted her to do under those circumstances. She must have known him so well. What about Leah? The Ramban says this thing that God says that she was hated. The Ramban isn't willing to go with the story of the Radak that he loved them both. He just loved this one a little bit more than that one. The Ramban brings the Medrash that says, Kivan shero Yaakov masem sherim so Leah ba'achoisa. When Yaakov saw how Leah imitated Rachel understudied Rocha, so as to deceive him. Not from Dasa Lagasha, he decided to divorce him. So at the Sheva Brothers, he decided this is not on. That's the Sheva Brothers, after Sheva Brothers, I'm divorcing Leah and I'll marry Rocha. Kivan Shepokta Kodesh Baruch Hu Bevonim, but Hashem gave his sons. Omar, he said to himself, Le'iman Shalailu Ani Megarish, such great children. He saw the beginning of the building up of the Jewish people. Obviously, this is God wants this to be part of some kind of a plan, and so he takes Rachel in addition to Leah, but doesn't divorce him, doesn't divorce her. But his anger is at Leah, not at Rachel. And at Lavan, yes, to some degree, but even though it was expected, but the anger, if there's any anger and disappointment, it's at Leah. There's no sense that Rachel let him down. Why not? You'll remember, I referred in one of the Monday night shiurim to the episode that we'll come to later on of Yehuda and Tamar, where Tamar is found to be, her husband has died, she's a widow, and she's found to be pregnant, and she's brought before the Beis Din. She was at that time, because of who she was and all of the different things, even though she was a widow, her having had a relationship with a man was a capital offense. So she's brought before the Beis Din. Who's the head of the Beis Din? Yehuda. Yehuda doesn't know at all at that point that he's the father of the baby that Tamar is carrying. Tamar lets him know during the proceeding in such a way that only he can understand the message, and then leaves it to him, putting Yehuda in the position where he could deny it, he could ignore it, and Tamar would be put to death, and that would be the end of it. Or he could own up, which he did. And sitting there as the chief rabbi of the high court of the world, Yehuda said, I'm the father. It's me. She's righteous. She's done nothing wrong. But she took a major gamble. He could well have denied it. And that's the end of it. She would have done nothing more. And Chazal questioned that. Why was she so reticent to save her life? Why was she so timid in the way she went forward in something that really was a matter of life and death for her? And Chazal say, because causing somebody shame is a form of murder. When you embarrass somebody, you're killing something in that person. And if it's an element of murder, then it's one of the things for which you have to give your life rather than do. If it's rather than kill somebody, you have to give your life. Then rather than embarrass somebody, you have to give your life. And Rabbeinu Yonah brings that as a law, brings that as a halacha, that is in fact so. And we've discussed that on the Monday night show and other occasions, but there are times where educationally you have to embarrass somebody when somebody is showing no capacity to be self-embarrassed. But where a person has the capacity to be self-embarrassed, then he doesn't need to be shamed from outside. People live with shame. And as long as a person is living with shame, and we discussed them in the Monday night show last week, that living with shame is a critical part of growth. There cannot be growth, there cannot be development, there cannot be refinement if we cannot live with shame. If a person is living with shame, if one is living with shame, then one isn't permitted to embarrass such a person, to remind him of that shame, to bring that shame up in public. And Tamar knew that Yehuda was living with the shame, and she wasn't going to embarrass him. If that meant she was going to die, so be it. That's one of the things you give your life for. You don't embarrass another person. Rachel knew that law too, and she knew that there's no way that Leah is going to be embarrassed, and she's going to be responsible for that. And if that means she loses her husband, then so be it. And for her, it did mean that. She had no idea that there would be a way for her to be married to. She just can't marry a man. There were special circumstances, but she didn't know there would be special circumstances. She assumed, when she gave that code to Leah, she assumed with absolute certainty that meant she would never marry her husband, that she would never marry Yaakov. And if that was the outcome of avoiding Leah embarrassment, that she was not... That Rachel could have avoided. Rachel was not prepared to live with that, and knew that was Yaakov's value system too. When she would explain to Yaakov and say, you know what my sister would have gone through, and I would have been responsible for that, that's one of the things we give our lives for. Certainly I would have to give up my marriage to you for. I'm lucky to be alive. Something that had I had to die for, I would have died for too. I didn't have to die for, I only had to sacrifice you for that. And he would have understood and did understand that. that knowledge of being able to operate from behind. Once again, if reporters wrote that story, what would we know? Nothing. We would know about love and cheating. We would know. What would we know? Would we know this background story? No. Her act of heroism that in fact changes the course of Jewish history is something nobody would ever know about. That was between her and Leah, and obviously between her and Yaakov later on. And if it wouldn't have been reported in the Torah by implication and in the Gemara in greater detail, we wouldn't have known anything about that. That's part of the tzniut, that the Gemara calls the ultimate of tzniut, the willingness to sacrifice a frontline role to bring about an outcome that is true and that is correct, no matter what the cost. That is tzniut, that is there's a courage in tzniut that, that Rachel develops and creates at this particular time. And that courage of tzniut is what gets transferred later on to Shaul and later on to Esther, who becomes the archetype of world-changing leadership in a way that is with the absolute role of tzniut, of her being serious, of her playing, organizing and leading through other people, not out front by herself. And that's the ultimate of femininity. That doesn't mean that's how every woman has to operate all the time, but that is the femininity that there is in the woman, in the way that she operates with the world and the way she impacts on the world.
I just wondered, like, what was the situation that Leah was in this to Russell?
What situation?
I mean,
was?
Russell loved her so much, didn't want to embarrass her, but why was she willing to take Russell's husband?
And God said, that one of the Rishonim say, we might have a chance to look at it next week, that the reason that God sympathized, why did God sympathize with her is one of the questions. It's all very well that she was being hated, that she was hated and you're nearly divorced, but she deserved it. Is what the Rishonim asked. Why does God sympathize with her? And God knew that she did it for only one reason, and that is she knew that there was one tzaddik in the world at that time. There was no one else. There were no other righteous people. There were no men. She wanted a tzaddik. And she wanted to avoid being married to Esav, and she wanted to be the mother of the founders of the Jewish people. And she knew prophetically that she had that role to play. She wouldn't have done it on her own. Her father forced her into it. The only question is, why didn't she give her life? Why didn't she sacrifice her life? And yes, she suffered all her life because of that. She's always the rejected one. She's always the second one. She suffers all her life as a result of that. But she's willing to go through that suffering in order to be married to Yaakov. And God tuned into something noble in that. Yaakov is angry, but God tuned into something noble in the fact that she went so far out and was so insistent and so pursuant of her desire to be married to Yaakov. Yeah, God related to something. I'll try and deal with it next week and back a little bit more.
And if it was prophesied, then she knew she was